A good Erev Shabbos, everybody. We are up to, right now, session number 14. Bezras Hashem, in the Chasson Shmuz you wish you had but never had. Very quickly, I do feel it's necessary again to remind everybody, the listeners and those that will be listening on recording later, that it is important to listen to these shiurim in order and not to skip. There's a lot of context and ideas, one built upon another, and especially when it comes to these matters, interpretation is extremely important. It's also important to understand that this shiur is not psak, it's not piske halacha, I am not a posek. We will talk about Torah sources, we will talk about psychological ideas, I will give you the sources, and then you follow up any which way that you want. It could open your eyes to different mahalchim, but one must, to find out the halacha, one must go through whatever process they do to find out the halacha. It won't come from this year. Another important point is, again, to acknowledge that these kinds of discussions have not usually been done in a public forum and certainly not online. However, because there is so much misinformation and so much confusion and so much exposure to very toxic ideas about sexuality, it's important, I think, and I believe, to expose people to the correct ideas. Each person, of course, has to be a judge as to whether or not this is a trigger for them, whether or not this is going to be helpful or not. If anybody has any questions during this year, they can text me to 718-793-1376. That's 718-793-1376. Questions that people would like to email to be reviewed at a later time and perhaps become part of a later shiur would be simchafeuerman@gmail.com. That's simchafeuerman@gmail.com. So we begin this year today, and we have been in the middle of general Shalom Bayis issues. And what we've been discussing is the 13 cognitive distortions that interfere with Shalom Bayis, meaning the 13 irrational ways of thinking that people have that stop them from being able to live their life and their love really to the fullest. And cognitive distortions, it's a psychological term, but what happens is oftentimes is we believe things that seem plausible or make sense to a degree or satisfy an emotional need, but they're actually not necessarily rational at all. And so that's what we've been talking about. And when it comes to Shalom Bayis, I was able to, just from years of experience and studying some Torah sources as well, and psychological sources, just to break it up into categories, and it seems to me there's about 13 of them. So today we're up to the fifth cognitive distortion, and that is that people have a belief, and I think that it's based on a more of a westernized notion of romantic love, which is they have a belief that love is like some kind of phenomenon that you really have no control over, that it just happens. It's there, and it goes, right? And in fact, you will hear people say, it's one of the reasons that their marriage has ended, is we fell out of love. Like, you know, you fall. You trip and you fall. It just happens. That, I believe, is a very incorrect and damaging belief. Now, let me make it clear. I have seen Torah authorities that denigrate romantic love, and I wouldn't do that at all. I don't think romantic love is a bad thing. I think romantic love is a wonderful thing, and I think that there are instances in the Gemara where you can see that and in our tradition, where you can see that people really did love each other. Just as an example, you know, the devotion that existed between Rabbi Akiva and Rachel, which you can find in Perek Afal Pi and Ksubas, you know, clearly that he appreciated her devotion and staying loyal to him and believing in him, so much so in the end he buys her a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, which was a very expensive gold crown of jewelry that women wore. He buys it for her. It's a gift. It's basically a romantic gift. But anyway, romantic love is not the issue. I believe in romantic love. The issue is that to think that there's nothing that we can do, that we're powerless to that. It's like, if you like chocolate ice cream, no one can blame you if you don't like vanilla. I like chocolate. I don't like vanilla. It's not your fault. But that's not what romance and love is about. It is definitely about actions that we take and things that we do. And every single day, and every single moment of our relationship, we have opportunities to either create an environment that fosters love or defeats love. And, you know, one way to understand it is that many of the miracles in life, are actually, though not under our control, something that happened because of what we do. Let me give you two examples. One is, if you'd like to grow a crop, what do you need to do? Well, you need to plow, you need to water, you need to weed, you need to do everything like that. And then, when you do all that, you really can't control it, but you made it happen, right? So if Hashem blesses your actions, then the miracle of growing a crop, of food coming out of the ground, will come. Even though it's b'zeas apecha, even though you have to work very hard to make it happen. And how about children? Right? Having a child is perhaps the greatest miracle of them all. Right? A child is born. I mean, what in the world can we do that could put life into a human being, that could put a soul into a human being? And yet, right, how are children conceived? Through what might be arguably a very mundane and physical act. The same thing that animals do. And of course, we've talked in the Shiurim that there's a very spiritual aspect to that act. Leaving that alone, though, on a technical level, you're talking about a very physical, basic act. So how is that possible? Right? The answer is that, yes, miracles happen, and we can't control the miracles that happen, but we can do very ordinary things that create fertile territory for those miracles to happen. And the miracle of love is the very same thing, that love itself is something you can't control. But there are things that you can do that foster it. And let's start with many of the things that we already spoke about in the past Urim, about creating a certain attitude of loyalty and putting the other person first and rooting out any passive-aggressive behavior, which I'm not going to go into detail again because we spoke about that in other Shiurim. But every moment, is the person next to you feeling hakaras hatov, is feeling a connection to you, feeling a gratitude? And then we go into another area, right, an area of just physical maintenance, of appearance, which is extremely powerful. We know that this was not taken lightly. One of the best examples of this is, and we spoke about this at other times, we spoke about this in the Parsha Shiurim, when Abba Chilkiah, who is a tremendous tzaddik. Abba Chilkiah was the grandson of Choni Ma'agal, and he too would have nisim happen to him when he would daven for water. And this is all brought down in the Gemara in Tainus on Chaf Gimel and Beis. And they're following Abba Chilkiah around, trying to understand the various mysterious things that he does. And he does a number of inexplicable things. It's a very worthwhile Gemara to study altogether. But one of the inexplicable things is that when he comes home, his wife comes and greets him, and there are Talmidim around, and she's all dressed up. She's wearing makeup or jewelry or some equivalent. The word is, you know, kishutim. It's hard to know whether kishutim means jewelry or makeup or both, but it really doesn't matter because she was doing what was at that time culturally significant to beautify herself. So she comes out and greets him all adorned. So later on, when the Talmidim begin to analyze and question Abba Chilkiah as to his various behaviors, and as I said, there's many different mysterious things that he did, which are subject to that Gemara. One of them is, what's the story with your wife coming out dressed like that, right? It's L'chara, Chisaron, and Tznius. And his answer to them is, K'day shelo yitein einov b'isha acheres. My wife does this, so my eyes should not stray and look at other women. Now, I don't need to tell you that Abba Chilkiah was a big tzaddik. I don't need to tell you that whatever degree that any of us in this generation could achieve in terms of Shmiras Ayinayim, it must pale in comparison to the standard of Tzidkus and Shmiras Ayinayim that Abba Chilkiah was able to achieve. And yet, despite all this, his wife was careful and, let us even say, zealous in taking care of her appearance and to greet him, specifically to greet him dressed up, right? So when he came home, she wasn't wearing shmatas and a house coat. Right? When he came home, she would all be dressed up. And I submit for you that you have to have brains. You have to understand that any of the principles you see and midos that you see expressed by our sages, you have to have seichel how to apply them. So you can overdo this and you can underdo this. But I want to speak about bizman hazeh. Do you really think today that women are immune to that? I understand in this case it was Abba Chilkiah's wife that dressed up to please Abba Chilkiah. But do you really think Bizman HaZeh, where it says in the Gemara in Sota, on Mantes Medbeis, in Ikvis of the Meshicha, that there's preachers, chutzpah yazgeh, that there's tremendous chutzpah in Azus today, do you really think today that a woman doesn't care about how her husband looks? Can you be so foolish to think that? That would be very foolish. So we have an obligation to take care of our looks, to make sure that we look pleasing, and always look pleasing in front of our spouses. We have to constantly romance our spouses from the most basic ideas of cleanliness, of appearance, of manner of speaking, of manner of dress, of diet and exercise, to take care of our health and our general constitution, to being considerate and being polite, and being caring and being loving. And when you do that, and you do that consistently, that's like watering and harvesting and all those things. You never really know what's going to happen because you can't control the miracle of what's going to grow, but you can create fertile ground. And that's where the miracle of love comes from. And anything else, any other thing that anybody will say or think, it's atas hayetzer, and it's rationalizations just to be lazy and not to do anything about your situation. Now, I cannot tell you how much it's going to work. I can't tell you that you're going to have this much love or that much love. I can tell you this, that anybody that takes these things seriously and works to make themselves attractive in the eyes of their spouse, and their spouse is working to constantly make him or herself attractive in their eyes, they will be an improvement. and there'll be a significant improvement. I suppose everything's totally in mazel. Some people might be zocha, just like some people are zocha to more parnosa than others. I suppose some people could be zocha to more love than others. But this will improve the climate and increase the love? This, I think, is fairly certain. Okay, so that was the fifth cognitive distortion, the belief that we're powerless to love. Let's talk about the sixth cognitive distortion. So the sixth cognitive distortion that people have, their irrational, arbitrary belief, is people think the following. They have this idea that if my spouse mistreats me in some way, or I don't approve of what my spouse is doing, well, then I'm justified to punish the person, yell, scream, or whatever it is. And it's an understandable distortion, because people think and believe in certain ways because of the culture. And in our culture, our religious culture, there's a tremendous emphasis on justice and on crime and punishment, right? You can't read two or three prokem in Tanakh without bumping into a story where a person's punished, mida keneged mida, for their behavior. And in truth, it is the job of authorities, parents, bezdin, nesiyim, milachim. It's the job of authorities to punish people and exert some control over society. So the mentality that we've adopted is that because justice is so valuable, it's our job on a micro level to administer justice. And that's a very dangerous concept, because although theoretically it might be true, on a practical level, we really don't have the tzidkus or the interpersonal skills to be able to constantly mete out justice with any kind of proper balance. And that it's hard enough today to raise children and to guide them properly and to do it where we're not being overly punitive and developing a resentment on their part and a rebelliousness on their part, which is a very difficult thing to do today. But to think that we have any ability, any expertise at all in trying to rebuke our spouses and to somehow or another teach them a lesson is complete and total delusion. And what's fascinating is, there's a Gemara in Erechin on Tes Zayin Amud Beis. Rabbi Tarfon said, T'mahani ani, I would be amazed today, im yesh bedor hazeh, if there's anybody in this generation that could accept rebuke. This is Rabbi Tarfon talking, right? This is Rabbi Tarfon in the Gemara in Erechim, saying that he'd be amazed to find somebody in this generation that could accept tochacha. I think we can all agree that the madrega that the people were on in the time of Rabbi Tarfon was significantly higher spiritually, and they were generally speaking more respectful of authority than in today's time. So I think that's a very powerful point. It's true there's a mitzvah of tochacha, and it's true that we do have a right to let the people know in our lives when they've hurt us and what we need for them, and that's totally fine. And the way it's done is with a lot of gentleness and a lot of humility, which is that this thing that's happening is very troubling to me. It's very painful to me. It's really important to me if you could take this into account. But to come in all high and mighty with, the vengeful agent of Kael Kunova Nokaim, that we're the vengeful agent of God, all right and justified, is completely, totally delusional and a recipe for disaster. So it's a tremendous distortion to think in any way that that we can pursue justice with that kind of high and mighty attitude. And you know, oftentimes people say, it's the principle of the thing. You know, all that kind of stuff, just throw it out the window, because you're gonna kill your relationship with that kind of thinking. All right, so let's cover one more today. We'll have time, I believe, to cover one more, and this would be the seventh distorted thought, which is, and this one's a very big one. Aren't they all? I keep saying that. It's like saying, which one is your favorite Yom Tov? All these cognitive distortions are big ones. Now, people have an idea in their head that, you know, sure I should care about my spouse. Sure I should do what he or she asks. But that's only if it makes sense. I mean, if it's crazy, if it's stissim, if it's stuyot, I mean, why should I do it? It doesn't make any sense. That sounds reasonable, right? So, you know, if your wife says to you, I really would like to go on vacation this year, and you know you can't afford it, or she wants to go to a particular place, so you say to yourself, because she wants some crazy thing, I'm b'chuyif to care? She's nuts. So you tell her, you don't say, which would be the smart thing to say, which is that, you know, I understand this is really important to you. We have some financial challenges. I'm not really sure how we can do this. I'm certainly open to figuring out with you how we can do this, because it's important to you. But right now, looking at the dollars and cents, I don't know how we can do it. That would be the smart thing to say, but that's not what people say generally. They say, what do you want to go here for? What do you want to go to Florida for? We can do something a lot cheaper and better. Why not do that, right? And anyway, it doesn't make any sense. What's the difference? So that's the distorted thinking. Now let's talk about what the Torah has to say. So the Torah tells us that the main way to do a chesed for a person is to fill their subjective need. You don't do a chesed by giving the person what you want. You do a chesed by giving the person what they want. And what they want is subjective. Now, the Torah says that you have to give an oni de machsoro. You have to enough to fill his loss. Let's take a look at the Gemara in Ksuvos on Daf Samach Zayin. Tanu Rabbanan, de machsoro sheyachsolo. You must give the oni a completion, a repair of whatever it is that he's missing. Afilu sus lirkavolav, even a horse to ride on, the eved lartz lefonov, and a servant to run in front of him. The person used to be very wealthy. He's used to having a chauffeur and driver. If you're going to give to this poor person now, you can, obviously, perhaps if there are other people that are starving, you're stuck on money, might want to go to something else first. But the point is, it is still a mitzvah of tzedakah to bring that formerly wealthy person back to the same standard of living that he was used to, even extravagances of having a servant run in front of him. Amru lo v'hilul hazaken, it was said on Hillel the Elder, shalokach l'ani ben tovim, he took for a poor person who was originally from a wealthy family, sus lirkav alav v'eved l'aretz l'fanav. He did this. Pamachas lo matzah eved l'aretz l'fanav. One time, Hillel HaZaken couldn't find anybody. You know, good help is hard to find. He couldn't find anybody to run in front of him to be the servant. V'aretz l'fanav shlosha milin. And he ran in front of him 3 mil. So in other words, Hillel HaZaken did it himself. That's a pretty strong indication of how important it is to meet the subjective needs of chesed for somebody. Then, interesting Gemara in Bava Metzia, Anan Tesa Min Aleph, says as follows, Omar Rav, so said Rav, Olam here, Odom Zoyer Bonas Ishto, a person should be very careful with the emotional damage of hurting a person verbally of his wife. In other words, ona means verbal insult, verbal pain. The person should be very careful not to cause his wife any type of pain from the way you speak to her. Shemitok shedemasa metsuya, because she cries frequently. Onosa krova, it is more prevalent that you will cause her pain, and you'll be violating the iser of Einah. Now, from a logical point of view, there's a very basic question over here. I would say if a woman cries very often, that would be an indicator that she's exaggerating. And adarabah, because she cries so much, it would be an indicator that one need to be less concerned about onah, because you're not really hurting her, because obviously she's just a crybaby or histrionic, right? Because it's not really bothering her. She cries about everything. So it's the other way around. I would think this is not, if a man cries, well, obviously, you know, what does it take to make a grown man cry? Obviously, he's really suffering. If a woman's crying, they cry for everything. So why should I have to be so worried about causing them to cry? But obviously, it's not that way. The Gemara says the opposite. Elamai, the Gemara is saying that no, the tears are indication of subjective pain. It's not that they cry more, it's that they feel more emotional pain. And because they feel more emotional pain, they're crying more. And that means the subjective pain is the reality as far as the Torah is concerned. The subjective pain is the reality as far as the Torah is concerned. And that is the correct notion. That is the correct idea, not the cognitive distortions people have that, if it's not so, you know, if it doesn't make sense to me, so I don't have to do it. No, the answer is that you dafka have to do it, because it's not about you. It's about the other person. So let's keep in mind, right, this cognitive distortion, that when you understand, perceive, hear a need, doesn't matter how trivial seeming it is to you, but when you hear that is important to your spouse, that becomes your obligation. Now, we can't always do what people want. We can't always do what we want. That's totally fine. If you can't do it, you can't do it. But don't treat it with disrespect. Don't treat it with respect. Don't say, it's a stupid thing. See, I'd really love to do this for you. I know this is important to you. I'm going to try to do it. I may not be able to do it. Very big difference, and really try. Treat it as important as your own need. So let me just shut off the mute.
But they've never
so
done
unmuted.
Better, so I'm wondering,
if anybody,
like, what happens if you just put yours in the garbage? Because I don't really want to find out.
Hello? We unmuted, so if people are going to talk, they're invited to talk if it is with questions that are nogea to the shir. If they want to take care of their Shabbos shopping, that's great too. I encourage it, but not while we're on the phone. So the other thing is next Friday is Erev Pesach, Bli Neder, Bezus Hashem. I do plan to give the shir, same time, same place. Afterwards, the following Friday we won't. But next Friday we will. Any last questions or comments before we end for today?
Right. I would just ignore it.
Okay. Everybody should have a great Shabbos. Be matzliach. Take care.
Now you're really...